Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the IBI Group First Quarter 2021 Results Conference Call. Please note that IBI's complete financial statements and management's discussion and analysis for the period ended March 31st, 2021 were filed on SEDAR and have been posted on IBI's website at www.ibigroup.com. During the formal remarks, all participants will be in listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. To ask a question, please press star, followed by 1. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. Some of the statements on today's call might contain forward-looking information. Listeners are cautioned not to place undue reliance on these forward-looking statements, since a number of factors could cause the actual future results to differ materially from the targets and expectations expressed. The company undertakes no obligation to update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise, unless expressly required by applicable securities law. For further information on risk factors, please view the company's annual information form filed with the Canadian Securities Regulatory Authorities and available on the company's website, SEDAR, or by contacting IBI directly. All amounts discussed today are in Canadian dollars, unless otherwise stated. I would now like to turn the call over to Mr. Scott Stewart, Chief Executive Officer for IBI Group. Please go ahead, Mr. Stewart.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us. Stephen Taylor, IBI's Chief Financial Officer, is also on today's call. We will be sharing an update on the firm's financial performance throughout the quarter, as well as providing some insights into our performance by region and by business sector. As a focused, well-capitalized, and technology-driven design firm, IBI has continued to post strong results in the first quarter of 2021. We generated net revenue of 13% over the same period in the prior year, approximately half of which was organic, and an adjusted EBITDA margin of 15%, all while investing meaningfully in new technologies to further drive our business forward. Our backlog at the end of the quarter totaled some 17 months, or $586 million of committed work, and our 2021 net revenue forecast are targeting 7% growth. With a net debt to adjusted EBITDA multiple of 1.1 times EBITDA, we are very well positioned to continue driving IBI's growth. As part of our continued evolution, Michael Norbiega was appointed as board chair during the quarter, assuming the role from retiring Dale Richmond. In addition, after the AGM later today, I expect that IBI's board composition will be 43% female. I'm pleased to highlight that the recent internal promotions of Audrey Jacob to Chief Operations Director and Kevin Bebenek to Global Sector Lead Intelligence, both of whom you'll hear more of at the AGM later this morning. We are already realizing the positive impacts of our strategic acquisition of Cole Engineering and Peters Energy Solutions, which complement our offerings in the water resource management and energy management sectors. Our Smart City Sandbox initiative, with its focus on fostering the development of innovative new products and solutions for cities, continues to grow and develop. We just announced our newest partner, leading global construction firm Multiplex. A key area of technology disruption for cities is construction, and represents an important focus of the Sandbox, and Multiplex is an enthusiastic leader in innovation in this space. With its domain knowledge and routes to market, it represents an exciting potential partner for Sandbox startups and SMEs, and we look forward to the synergies that will result. IBI's interest in Sandbox startup Switch, a leader in electric vehicle charging and energy management, is approaching an exciting milestone with the launch of a pilot at our Toronto head office that will demonstrate how EV charging management platform with bidirectional charging capabilities can significantly reduce the cost of EV charging while enhancing the overall efficiency of the grid. We will be formally announcing this exciting and innovative project in Q2. Switch is also working with IBI in the deployment of its technology in Thornbury, Ontario. Our investment in Switch supports IBI's commitment to building EV infrastructure and fostering its increased usage across Canada and beyond. In addition to our work with Switch, our transit architecture team is continuing its collaboration with transit engineering and systems professionals within the intelligence sector of IBI. We are conducting a number of bus fleet electrification studies for clients, including Hamilton and Bellevue. As more cities transition to electric transit fleets, they need support of IBM power requirements, charging configurations, as well as designing the necessary infrastructure into new and existing transit maintenance and storage facilities. IBI brings a holistic expertise to bear on this work. Within our product portfolio, our Travel IQ traveler information software continues to gain traction across North America. We've just won a statewide contract and have several additional ongoing opportunities. I should highlight that just this morning we have signed a contract with the South African Road Authority, the SANRAIL, for the delivery of both our traffic management systems as well as Travel IQ in the major urban centers of Durban, Cape Town, and Johannesburg. This is a continuation of the longstanding relationship that we've had with SANRAIL and the implementation of our systems in the country. IBI's Curb IQ product, which we launched last year, is currently engaged in a pilot with Urban Movement Labs in Los Angeles, a first-of-its-kind collaboration of government, business, and the community to design and deploy transportation technology solutions in real urban conditions. Urban Movement Labs was started by the mayor of LA and includes partners like Lyft, Verizon, UPS, and Hyundai. While IBI's partnership gives us the opportunity to deploy several of our technology solutions in an important U.S. market, this engagement is a pilot of Curb IQ's digital curbside data collection and analytics capabilities in downtown LA and Hollywood. We are continuing to leverage our N-Space workplace management solution across our global offices as part of IBI's return to office strategy. N-Space has also been used by organizations on a fee-for-service basis, and we are pursuing a number of new opportunities with this product as well as new routes to market. In addition to the wins we've seen in our intelligence sector and through our technology pivot, our buildings and infrastructure sector remains strong with a significant backlog of work. We continue to see win assignments as a result of our technology leadership and our ability to collaborate with clients across all areas of our practice. Last week, we made a formal announcement about our role in Ford's Research and Engineering Center at its Dearborn campus in Michigan. IBI is leading the project architecture, engineering, and landscape design. Our expertise in technology-driven design coupled with our smart cities portfolio helped us to secure this work, as well as all the elements that are within the building in terms of technology and making it a truly smart building in keeping with Ford's direction to be a design lead. Our relationship with Ford and Ford Land has also been strengthened with our collaboration on other Ford properties in and around Dearborn and the Michigan Central buildings. And in the UK, the five-year government healthcare infrastructure plan continues, with IBI design projects including Hillenden Hospital in London being the first tranche, our secured projects at Kettering and Torbay form part of the second tranche, and our teams continue to develop these projects as they move through their approval processes. Our UK teams are also supporting pursuits on healthcare projects across our regions, including work in Saudi Arabia, as well as holistic healthcare planning expertise in other valued areas and other service areas across the firm. In IBI's infrastructure sector, our backlog was further increased this quarter as we fully executed the design agreement on Vancouver's Broadway subway extension. Work continues on Toronto's Eglinton Crosstown LRT, your Ontario LRT, the Scarborough and Yonge North Subway extensions, the Edmonton LRT, and the Tel Aviv Red Line, among others. We are in the pursuit phase of a number of other major projects. I would now like to hand the call over to Stephen Taylor, our Chief Financial Officer, to take you through highlights of IBI's financial results for Q1 2021. Stephen.
Thank you, Scott. For the first 3 months of 2021, we've carried forward the momentum we built in 2020, which is evidenced by the accomplishments and hard work of our global team. Growth in net revenue, adjusted EBITDA, backlog, and further net debt reductions offer clear indicators that IBI's strategy and our pivot to technology is working. Net revenue grew by 13% year over year and by 10% over the previous quarter, coming to a total of $108.9 million. Adjusted EBITDA, which we are now headline reporting on net of IFRS impact, IFRS 16 impacts, continued the positive trend and grew 17% over Q1 2020, resulting in a margin of 15% of net revenue. Improved performance from buildings and infrastructure primarily drove our net revenue growth, with these sectors posting increases in net revenue of 9% and 30%, respectively. Our intelligence sector generated net revenue just under $20 million, with $4.5 million in adjusted EBITDA, or 22.4% as a percentage of net revenue. Intelligence net revenues were modestly lower over last year, partly attributable to a movement of approximately $300,000 in the foreign exchange rate. This also impacted our operating earnings in the intelligence sector, reducing them by about $250,000. Our recurring support, software support and maintenance billings held steady over the previous year, but would have been approximately 4% higher, except for the impact of the negative movements in foreign exchange. As Scott mentioned earlier, we've seen solid performance from the UK, owing largely to our healthcare practice there, with net revenue growth of 12%, an adjusted EBITDA increase of 143%, and over 300% improvement in net income before tax. Our U.S. segment also continued to improve, posting 2% net revenue growth, 137% increase in adjusted EBITDA, and net income before tax significantly higher year over year. Cash flows provided by operating activities were $10.8 million compared to use of cash of $393,000 in Q1 2020. Reflecting a reduction in non-cash operating working capital, decreased taxes and interest payments, and an increase in the change in fair value of other financial liabilities. Our net income in the quarter incorporates a pre-tax loss in fair value of other financial liabilities of $900,000 compared to a gain of $2.1 during Q1 2020. The loss is part of completing the accounting on the redemption of the 5.5% debentures, which we redeemed January 15th for total consideration of $47.6 million. We continued to reduce debt in the period, exiting with net debt of $52.6 million, the lowest it's been in the last decade, resulting in a healthy 1.1 times net debt to adjusted EBITDA ratio. We've also continued to be disciplined about reducing DSOs, which were 63 days in Q1 2021, 4 days lower relative to the same quarter in 2020, which further bolsters our financial strength. During the quarter, IBI's Management Partnership Group, or GMP, completed a private placement of $1.2 million of the common shares they held to institutional investors. This is a mechanism utilized by GMP to manage and fund succession planning as partners in the ownership group retire. GMP and IBI's executive team remain fully aligned with and committed to our shareholders. As subsequent to the transaction, GMP and its affiliates continue to hold approximately 6 million shares plus units that are convertible into a further 6.3 million shares, or approximately one-third of IBI's current shares outstanding. As Scott mentioned, our 17-month backlog as at March 31, 2021, represents an increase of approximately 20% over Q1 2020. For the full year 2021, we are pleased to reiterate our total net revenue forecast of approximately $422 million, which, if achieved, represents 7% growth over the prior year, and we'll provide a 6% compound annual growth rate since 2013. With the clean balance sheet, free cash flow, and financial flexibility, IBI can be highly strategic with capital allocation. We remain focused on growing through further acquisitions, organic opportunities, and other value-creating initiatives. In addition to our success in strengthening our financial position, we have also enhanced our focus on advancing ESG initiatives. We launched IBI's inaugural ESG profile during our first ever hosted Capital Markets Day in late March within our Smart City Sandbox, and we encourage shareholders and guests to join us for the AGM later this morning, which is being hosted with the same digital engagement venue. After the formal part of that meeting, Scott will share a message to shareholders and take the opportunity to showcase other members of our team. Thank you. Scott and I will now take questions, operator.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Should you have any questions, please press star followed by one on your touchtone phone. You will hear a three-tone prompt acknowledging your request, and your questions will be polled in the order they are received. Should you wish to decline from the polling process, please press star followed by two. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before pressing any keys. One moment for your first question. Your first question comes from Benoit Poirier with Desjardins. Benoit, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much, and good morning, everyone. Congratulations for the strong quarter. Looking at your margins, very strong improvement for each business segment, especially on a year-over-year basis. Steve, could you maybe provide some comment on what is sustainable going forward when looking at the EBITDA margin for each business segment?
Well, what I would say, Benoit, is as I've stated before, it's directly related to the amount of backlog that we have in the sectors, and we have had strong increases in the backlog in all three of our sectors. In the foreseeable future, I don't see that the margins are going to vary that significantly from what they are at the moment. Our workforce is very, very engaged at the moment in delivering work on behalf of our clients. And as we've also said, we expect to see continued margin growth in intelligence as our SaaS products start to gain some traction, which Scott has commented on, and we're starting to see some better uptake in those products over the course of the last few months.
That's great. And also, Scott, looking at the recent appointment of Kevin Bibenek to Global Director for Intelligence, could you maybe provide some color about the contribution, the objective, and his mandate in his new role?
Ben, I'd be delighted. First, Kevin has been with IBI for a number of years, and he joined us initially within the intelligence group. So he has some 30 years of experience in building and growing out and diversifying our offerings in different sectors, including into areas like ports, where Kevin has been certainly at the forefront of diversifying our client base. Kevin has a particular interest, given that he's coming over from having headed up Eastern Canada, our premier performance region across the firm. There's a particular interest in taking technology more into our building sector and into the infrastructure sector. You may have recalled that we had said from the outset that we want to, part of our focus in technology is to be part of the life cycle of these amazing buildings that we design, these iconic buildings. So we're heavily involved now in the planning and design, and we are now building platforms that take us then throughout the life cycle into the operations management and even regulation of those assets. Kevin is emotional and committed to doing that, and that's part of his new mandate in coming over to head up intelligence.
Okay, that's great. And Steve, when we look at your balance sheet, the leverage ratio came down still next quarter, so 1.1, which is significantly below your targeted level. So obviously, nice problem to have, but could you talk a little bit about the M&A opportunities and if you see any opportunities to deploy cash?
Sure. I mean, we have a pipeline of M&A activities that we're looking at a number of targets regularly. We haven't pulled the trigger on anything this quarter, but that is our number one focus. We have resources committed to finding new partners to come together with, and so over the course of this year, we expect to be executing on some other transactions.
Okay. Thank you very much for the time.
Thank you. Your next is from Frederic Bastien with Raymond James. Frederic, please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Scott, when we heard from you, say, 12 months ago at the beginning of the pandemic, you were mentioning that you know, your employees were quite happy to work remotely. There was a lot of engagement. They were pretty much shooting the lights out. How is it going? Like now, you know, we're obviously a year into it, more than a year into it. How is employee morale? Are they wanting to go back to the office? And that's the first part of the question. And well, different question. The second one would be around your ability to recruit talent in this current environment, and the fact that you know you obviously have a great backlog, but you're going to need some good resources to basically execute on that backlog. So any call there, we appreciate it.
Good questions. We did a few things to monitor and gather insight into how staff are doing. First, in June of last year, we did a small survey about how people were coping from working from home and their general attitudes about even a return to office and how they felt about that. At that time, and I'll give you a stat, and that is that we did a calculation and based on their propensity and interest in working from home, number of days a week, or return to the office number of days a week, and on balance, staff were saying they would like to be in the office 1.75 days a week. And they generally were enjoying or found that there were benefits to working from home. Now, there were also challenges, as you can appreciate, because of the pandemic, significant challenges, and we're all experiencing that kind of burnout. We did a full-on engagement survey that we published in February, and this we compared to survey that we did 2 years ago with staff, and we do this regularly to monitor how staff are doing, their attitudes, the challenges, the issues. Without exception, across the firm, engagement was so much more positive than what it was 2 years ago. And there may be a variety of reasons for that, and that is in spite of the pandemic. Now, I'm not saying that the pandemic is not an issue. We're certainly seeing staff burnout. We're seeing people engaged in very long hours, too many long hours, and it is a major concern for us. So we've instituted a number of initiatives about wellness, establishing a proper work-life balance, and so on. We also asked the same question about their engagement or interest in returning to work at their office. It's interesting, the stat that we now have is approximately 1.65 days per week is the preferred mean or medium of them being in the office. So people have adapted to working from home, are seeing benefits associated with it, and that will be a key consideration then as we start to open up the offices and bringing people back into the office. So that's sort of to the first question that you asked, Frederick. So the second, about accruing talent. There's no question. Talent for us is going to be a challenge. A few stats on that. We are seeing our turnover rate, our voluntary turnover rate, that is in the order of 5%. And clearly that dropped almost universally across the industry throughout the pandemic. There is a real competition to acquire and hire talent, and we're seeing a lot of poaching that is underway. But 5% voluntary turnover is still low for us. We have been able to hire in excess of 300 people, about 160 people since the beginning of the year. So we're able to do it remotely and online, and that has been working very well in the way our IT platform or team is supporting people as they engage remotely from home. So we have been able to acquire talent, and we've certainly also pursued strategic talent acquisitions, people who can then lead in various areas. So it's a challenge. We're seeing certain pressures around wages and salaries. But we are able to, thus far, be able to acquire the right kind of talent to help us manage through the work. The final comment I would make is that part establishing this culture of the firm and being able to have that conversation with new talent about being a technology-driven design firm with this tremendous innovation sets up a different conversation with staff and new hires. The young people coming into the workforce, that's what they want. They come from environments where they play Minecrafters at home. They want technology. They don't want to be given a quill pen to do design work on buildings. And that has been a really attractive feature of IBI in attracting new talent.
Awesome. Thanks, Scott. That's great color. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. We have a following question from Maxine Sechev with National Bank. Maxine, please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen.
Hi, Max.
Hi, Max.
I just wanted to follow up on backlog metric. I mean, obviously pretty impressive at 17 months. Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, historically, a rule of thumb in the industry is that you want to be around that 12 months run rate so that, you know, clients don't wait. So I'm just wondering right now, is the nature of the contracts is different in your backlog relative to kind of history, or how should we think about that, you know, 17 months run rate? Thanks.
I would offer two perspectives on it. Certainly, we've had an accelerated growth in committed work, and you do recall that the last time we spoke, our backlog was at 18 months. Well, it isn't as if the absolute dollar value has gone down. It's that we've increased our capacity because we've been hiring more people to be able to execute, and that then brings down the number. Clearly, 17 months, I don't believe, is a sustainable number for the very point that you make. I think we should be targeting something lower, maybe more in the 12, 13 months. But what we are also seeing, though, is the contracts that we are securing are really long-term contracts, and that what we like about that is the stability that it then brings. And there are other contracts that we haven't yet announced that are truly long-term contracts. I mentioned Sanrail. That's a seven-plus year contract. The statewide project that we won that, unfortunately, no one allows to mention what state, has an extended period to it as well. It's a multi-year contract. Those are the kinds of contracts that we really have, really like, because it provides that long-term stability. I would still like to see us in that, in traditional design work, it's probably going to be in the 12-month area, but I would say that what we're targeting in intelligence and continuing services more in that 13, 14, 15-month time frame that reflects the long-term contracts that we've secured and would want to continue to secure.
Right. Okay, no, that's super helpful. And then just circling back to intelligence, you know, obviously, you know, Curb IQ and Travel IQ, these products have been out for, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe 24 months, maybe less. Do you mind maybe kind of comparing how the trajectory of adoption or penetration from a client base kind of vis-a-vis your prior expectations? Is there sort of any deviation, any surprises? Maybe, yeah, just any color on that. Thanks.
In Travel IQ, what we are doing is we're winning more than our traditional share of work significant because of our speed to market, our pricing point, and so we've had a lot of success with it. there was a bit of a pause, if you will, in some of the initiatives that we were wanting to take into the more B to customer, B to consumer perspective because of the pandemic. We have completed the rollout now of a pan-North American web app that was just completed about a month ago. We haven't launched it yet. We see that along with the other kinds of data collection services that we've now put in place and some discussions with potential reusers and distributors is new. We're trying to adapt whatever we have this data, we have these platforms. These are new business areas and new opportunities for us. Some of these things we're still discovering, Max. I would say that in Travel IQ, we're quite satisfied with what we expected to where we would be, and I think we're there. Curve IQ is, we're at the vanguard of what that can do and why we developed it. The whole idea of regulating space, curb space, is new to most municipalities. And we see it as a longer-term play, and so this partnership initiative in L.A., and a very significant project of and by itself, is important for us because of the profile that it will then provide us. We do see that this will still roll out and grow significantly over the next 24 months. But it's a new product. It's a new service. It's a service that people hadn't thought of before for the most part. And we're at the forefront of it.
Right.
We're not at
okay,
all
no,
disappointed in the progress that we're making.
Right. Okay, no, that's great. And then just, I mean, obviously a pretty high-profile contract with Ford. I mean, given sort of in parts in auto OEM space, is there, you know, anything else that you might be doing with other potential customers in that space, or Ford is really a bit of a one-off?
Well, we have long-standing relationships with all the traditional automotive companies, Ford and General Motors and Chrysler. What's happening now, and there are some significant startups in that space, Tesla aside, and it's all about electric vehicles. The amount of work that is underway is really quite significant, and it's across the board. We're seeing that all the traditional automotive companies are changing their product line. They're dropping conventional combustion engine platforms. They're all going to electric vehicles. There is significant effort in the area of just batteries. and all of these then represent significant opportunities for us, especially in the startup kinds of businesses where it's not only the EV platform, but it's new vehicle launches, and that's an area where we excel. And we've also been working in the EV platform area. So that market is hot these days. It's very hot. The traditional combustion engine market, not so much.
Right. So I guess the bottom line, that you do see some incremental opportunities, right?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Okay. And then just very last question. You mentioned, Scott, something around, you know, like obviously fighting for talent and things like that. And in terms of wages, is it still what kind of like in the ballpark for the employees, or are we starting to see inflation coming through there as well? Maybe any comments there?
It may be a little too early yet, Max, to say for sure that there's a fundamental shift to inflation. We've certainly seen some pressure in selected with selected individuals in the last couple of months. But I would say it's too early to say if there's a fundamental concern around inflation.
Okay, that's great. That's it for me. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Michael Tufomi with TD Securities. Michael, please go ahead.
Thanks very much. Maybe a bit of a different question regarding the U.S. market. Obviously, lots of enthusiasm around the opportunities associated with U.S. infrastructure spending and the proposal that's there now. assuming something does get passed and goes through, though, there'll be, you know, heightened demand for engineering and design services kind of across the board. I'm wondering, when you talk to your clients in the private sector, are any of them looking at trying to advance projects perhaps a little more quickly to get out front of the you know, that infrastructure spending bill and the demand that's going to create for services in the sector?
We are seeing, and I go back to concerns around the environment and electric vehicles. We're seeing significant interest in the transit sector, both public transit as well as school buses, where the organizations are taking initiatives now to position themselves to be able to secure funding, presuming, and once the infrastructure bill is passed. So we are doing work with them, doing some sort of strategic planning, sort of initial assessments, looking at grid load consideration, storage capabilities. I mean, a footnote, school buses are a perfect example of being able to use energy through the day, solar energy as an example, and the vehicles themselves become the store as opposed to battery plants separately. And that's another footnote where Switch comes in. So we are seeing that kind of activity. I would say the emphasis is very much around the clean energy and the environment, where organizations are getting prepared to take advantage of the bills once they're approved. There is typically a significant lead time, and the people that we're working with now are looking to collapse that lead time so that they are ready with projects when the bill's approved.
Okay, that's helpful. Thanks, Scott. With respect to headcount, can you talk about what you're doing? I mean, you have obviously an incredibly strong backlog, and more work sounds like it'll be added in the second quarter with some of the new awards. Are you in the process of ramping up right now, and how challenging is that in the current environment?
Well, we have we've had a net increase, and this is outside of any acquisitions. We've had a net increase of 160 staff since the beginning of the year. We've been able to do that, and certainly it's been a lot of work, and our HR team and the hiring team has been very, very busy. But there haven't been any fundamental barriers or limitations to those hires. They are typically younger staff. They are tech savvy. They are accustomed to to working remotely. So we'll see. But so far, it's just a concern that we have, but nothing that has been a limitation on our growth.
Okay. And then lastly, I did get on the call a little bit after it started, so I apologize if you've already covered this off. But just a question about capital allocation priorities going forward. The balance sheet and the leverage position continues to look more favorable with every passing quarter. What are the thoughts around how you plan to deploy capital going forward?
We have a lot of flexibility. Stephen had mentioned before you got on the call that we have a pipeline of opportunities that we're looking at in the M&A world. I would also say we're looking at opportunities in terms of direct strategic investment, like startups, like we did with Switch, where it's in alignment with them and us being a route to market, so there's synergy in investing in them. We are also going to continue to invest in new products and different routes to market, as well as strategic hires. So all of that's on the table. Our first priority would be, of course, those kinds of investments that really support the growth of the firm.
Okay. All right. That's helpful. That's all for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as a final reminder, should you have any questions, please press star 1. Mr. Taylor, you may proceed.
Okay. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, I just want to thank everybody for joining us on the call today, and I wish everyone a healthy and happy weekend. Certainly where I am right now, the sun is out, and it's a nice relief from what we've experienced for the past month and a half. So look after yourselves, and thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes your conference call for today. We thank you for participating and ask that you please disconnect your lines.